Well, I gave you a little bit of a sense that we're going to be talking to somebody that's taken on a leadership role and a creative role. Her name is Mahika Chopra, and she's founder of a program called Stories on a Plate. Stories on a Plate. And I'll introduce you to her, and in a moment, she will describe exactly what she's doing. But let me welcome you, Mahika. How are you today?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
Good, thanks. Before we talk about your program, I am sure that other people listening would just like to know a little bit about you, how old you are, where you go to school, some of the things you like doing in addition to Stories on a Plate.
So I'm 15. I'm a sophomore at Shadyside Academy. I really like to cook, obviously. I also like to write a lot. I write a lot of poetry. I play the piano, and I'm a cheerleader. So those are some things I like to do.
You are a busy person, clearly. When did your love of poetry come about?
I think when I was like 6, I wrote my first poem, and obviously it was pretty bad, but since then I just have been writing poems. I wrote poems like every day when I was younger, and then since then it just evolved, and I started writing a lot more at my school. I was in a literary magazine in middle school, which, you know, definitely fostered some of my love for writing, and then I just kept doing that throughout high school, so yeah.
Well, that's great, and you mentioned cheerleading as well. You've got a very full life. There's a lot going on. So Stories on a Plate, it's a great name. It gives some indication right away of what you're doing. Can you explain the program and in particular, too, what gave you the impetus to want to do it?
Yeah, so Stories on a Plate is an organization that I started in August of 2025, I think. And we basically have monthly events where we'll have someone who will volunteer to share a meal or a dish that's important to them, whether it's from their culture or from their childhood. And then they'll show the group how to cook it, and then we'll also all eat it together. So it's just a fun way to learn about different cultures and learn a new experience and cook something new. And then what kind of gave me the inspiration to start it was, like I mentioned, I really like to cook, but I think I kind of tend to stay within the same few cuisines. I don't really explore a lot of other cuisines because I don't know how to cook them. And I think also, I just think that food is such a universal thing and it brings everyone together. We all have to eat, and I just think it's a nice way to learn more about different people. So that was kind of like the crossroad of this idea was Stories on a Plate, where you can learn how to cook, but you can also learn about new stories through cooking, even if you maybe don't love to cook. I think it's just a fun way to learn something new, so yeah.
So how did your first, the debut of this go? How did you find the people and who cooked and what did they cook?
So we had a pilot session in August, I think. Yeah, August of 2025. And my parents were actually the hosts for that session because, you know, we didn't want to like go too far in because we wanted to work out all the kinks first and see, you know, how the whole process would work. So my parents, I think they had made a dish that we make really often, like I'd say 2 to 3 times a month in our house. And it's basically salmon with tandoori seasonings, which is Indian seasonings, and lemon rice and then salad. We just make it all the time because it's super simple and easy and it's really good. So they showed how to make that. We just invited our close friends and family since, you know, like I said, it was just a pilot. And yeah, it was super fun. I think everyone who came really enjoyed it, and it gave us a good perspective on what we would need to fix in the future and all the logistical parts of it. But yeah, my parents hosted the first one.
And did you find that conversation flowed as a result of the context that you created with the people that you brought over? Because I suspect that's one of the goals, is to get people talking, right?
Yeah, people definitely were talking, especially people who had never met before. It was just, usually in all the sessions, when we have a group, I'd say like, maybe if we have a group of 15 people, we'll break everyone off into groups of 3. so they can all cook different parts of the meal together. And we could definitely tell that within those little groups, people would start talking and making conversation, especially since they were all had this kind of like shared goal of making this meal together. So it was just really easy for them to get talking. And then a lot of people who come to the events consider themselves like foodies, like they've tried all these different restaurants in the area. So then they start talking about their favorite foods and all the restaurants they like in Pittsburgh. And I just noticed it's really easy for them to get the conversation going. So, yeah.
So it, just to be sure I understand, in a case like this, was a group maybe making rice, a group was making salmon, were they everybody involved in preparation of the meal, or during the pilot it might have been just your family doing the cooking?
It kind of depends on who's showing how to make the dish, because everyone likes a different format. But usually, yeah, we'll have we'll break the entire group off into smaller groups, and then it's not really like one group will work on the rice and one group will work on the salmon. It'll be like maybe one group's chopping something for the rice, and then if we all have to cook, then we'll all cook. Like, we won't have different cooking stations because that's a lot to organize. It'll be like we'll cook all the things together, but then different people will chop different things and prepare different things in their own little like subgroups. So it kind of depends though on like what kind of dish we're cooking, because sometimes it'll be easier. Like, we had an Italian session at some point and we were making handmade pasta. So for that, it was a lot easier to break off into little groups, and everyone has their own piece of dough and like rolls it out themselves and flattens it and cuts it themselves. But then when it actually comes to cooking the pasta, we all do it together in like a big pot. So it depends on what we're cooking, but yeah.
And you've got to sort of come up with, I hate to call them ground rules, but it's kind of like, here's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. This will be, you know, follow this process, and eventually you're going to go to the pasta making machine to, I've never used one, but I've seen them, you know, to extrude your pasta, and eventually to cook it. It seems like there are so many ways you could carry this out. This first group are probably people that you and your family all knew, but they did not necessarily know each other. Is that right?
Yes.
And that made it fun. What do you think you're going to be doing moving forward as you continue with Stories on a Plate?
So we definitely want to get the events from, instead of just once a month, to more frequent. And right now we're hosting them at a kitchen at Christ Church in Fox Chapel, which is not accessible for everyone. We have a lot of people coming from the city who find it kind of far, and you know, it's not the easiest for everyone to come to. So we do want to work on finding another kitchen that's maybe in Squirrel Hill or Shadyside, like somewhere else in the city where people can come who live in the city, and then increasing the event frequency to maybe like 2 or 3 times a month, just so, you know, everyone can get a different feel for how the events work. And then, like I had mentioned, was talking to you earlier, I'm also thinking about starting a podcast this summer for Stories on a Plate, where I just think it'd be a nice way to have like that digital platform for the stories, where we would have maybe different chefs, not even professional, amateur chefs, who want to come and talk about important dishes to them and why. So still working on that, but that's definitely something that we're hoping to do.
Yeah, I like the idea that you're considering churches or other more or less public spaces. Doing it in your home is fine, but doing it in a neutral space where everybody, you know, is kind of on an equal footing, a space that's designed, you know, to serve people in that way. And also the kitchens, the commercial kitchens are probably great to have available. Do you think that, who will set the menus in these other, like as you do it in the future, will that still be you, or do you think others will come up with what's going to be served?
So actually, I never really set the menu. It's always the person who's volunteering to show the cooking that will set the menu, because, for example, like, I'm not really sure. We had a Russian session, like, last month. I'm not really sure what Russian food looks like, and I'm not going to, you know, tell someone what to cook when it's they're choosing to come and, like, volunteer to show their dishes. So usually they'll just pick their, top 3 or 4 favorite dishes, and then we'll kind of go through the process of making that and, like, how it looks. and then we'll decide what's the easiest to make in this session. You know, sessions are only 2 hours long, so what will be the easiest for the whole group to make? And then we'll kind of just go from there. But yeah, I never really choose for them what they should make. I just kind of...
No, that makes sense. So somebody for every event, more or less, will be the host.
Mm-hmm.
And that person will decide whether it's a nationality or maybe just a specialty that they cook. Is that about right? Or should they pick a certain theme?
Well, it kind of depends. So, like, for example, in September, I think we had a Rosh Hashanah themed event. So we invited our friends who were Jewish to show us how to make Jewish food. So usually it's like pretty decided already before we even like start. Or we had one for Diwali, which is an Indian holiday. So we had an Indian person showing how to make Indian food.
That's great. So it does introduce culture
and
traditions. Do you remember much about the Russian meal?
Yeah. I don't even want to try to pronounce the names because I don't know. I know I'll butcher it. But there were the meat dumplings. We had those. And then I think it was pulmeni. I think that one I can say. But there was also a soup where it was a cold soup. There were vegetables. And then we had this like root beer kind of soda substance poured on top with like sour cream and dill, which I had never had anything like that. But yeah, that was definitely a new experience for me. But it was really cool to see.
We were talking about Russian cuisine on the radio last week. Ricky and I were in Washington, D.C., and we saw a Russian restaurant that looked amazing. Unfortunately, they were closed during the times we could go in. But what a neat idea. And it's just a great way to cross cultures and get people to know. So are you looking for more venues to hold this in? Or for more families that may want to participate in what you're doing?
Yeah, I'd definitely say we're always looking for more people to participate and especially to host an event. I know it can sound really intimidating, but everyone who's shown how to make a dish, they've always said that they found it a lot of fun and they found it so like fulfilling to share their culture with other people and for other people to learn about something that's important to them. So we're always looking for more hosts and more participants, even if you just want to come with your friends or family to an event. It's super fun. And yeah, we're definitely looking for more venues. I'd say that's very much at the top of our list. So if you know of any venues that you think would be interested in something like this, we'd really love that. So
you can learn more at www.stories-on-plate.com. So www.storiesonaplate, put a hyphen between the words, .com. And you can get a hold of Mahika Chopra. If you're just joining us, Mahika is 15, finishing up 10th grade at Chady Side Academy. I'm curious what concerns you a little bit more generally. You get a chance to observe people from your perspective, peers as well as adults, and maybe assumptions they make about other cultures just interactions that people are having. Are things okay? Do you think people need to... could improve, or do you know what I mean? I'm just curious how things are from your perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely noticed a lot of assumptions people have about different types of food through these events. I remember, like I said, when we had the Diwali event, I was talking to some people afterwards and they were like, wow, I'm so surprised because whenever I think of Indian food, I just think of it being really spicy and I don't think of it as having all these like nuances, like these different flavors and these, you know, different seasonings. I just kind of think of it as spicy and like butter chicken, which we did actually make butter chicken, but it was definitely prepared differently than how they would have expected. And I think people always have these kind of like preconceived notions about different types of food, which I don't think is always like inherently harmful. I think you're always going to have some kind of internal biases when you're looking at different cultures, but I think it is important to keep an open mind and not limit yourself to, oh, this doesn't sound good to me or this doesn't look good, because if you try it, you could think something else. So yes, I've definitely noticed a lot of assumptions people have, but I think by the end of their events, their assumptions are always kind of changed, and then they're able to come into the next event with a more open mind. So,
do you find either as part of Stories on a Plate or as part of other activities you're involved with, are just beyond food, are people making assumptions based on heritage of people, country of origin, or just drawing conclusions without any evidence or information?
I'd say yes, 100%. And I think everyone has kind of experienced that in some way. I've definitely experienced it. I'm Indian, but I don't think it's just, you know, depending on your culture. I think people experience that in all kinds of ways, no matter what culture you're a part of or what you're doing. I just think people have a lot of, like I said, preconceived notions about different things. And I think I've definitely experienced that a lot at my own school, especially in middle school. I think I would experience a lot of, definitely, I'd say racial stereotypes about my culture, but I think people are always going to have those ideas, and you can't always control how other people think, and you just have to control how you react. But I definitely do think that, yes, it's a common thing that people have these like biases towards other heritages or cultures.
And one reason I'm asking is what you're doing with Stories on a Plate might well provide opportunities for those to melt away. Even though you're not necessarily deliberately trying to get that as a goal, I don't think it might be a byproduct of what you're doing as people spend time together.
I actually would say that is definitely a goal of ours.
Oh, good.
It's not something that I like to highlight a lot, because I think it can sound kind of negative if I'm saying, you know, oh, I think people have all these biases and I want to kind of negate those. But I actually do think that is definitely a goal of ours when we're doing Stories on a Plate events.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I think it makes it even more attractive personally. But you're right. Some people might be less inclined, I would imagine. But I think it's a great goal
Thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to add about the work you're doing?
Yeah, actually something I did forget to add was that all the events are ticketed. So people pay a fee for the tickets of $30 to $35, and then all the proceeds go to local food banks. So that's another goal, is to help fight food insecurity. So I just wanted to add that. I forgot to say that before. But
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was wondering if you have leftovers, but that's a great way to do it, to be able to provide money to food banks so they can use it in the way they know that is best for them.
Yeah.
StoriesOnAPlate.com is how you can get more information. Put a hyphen between each word. We've also linked to the website at slbradio.org. Mihika, it's really great to talk with you.
Thank you, too.
Any shout-outs you'd like to give to anybody that's been helping in this effort?
Yeah, definitely my mom. I'd say she's super helpful. She helps me with, like, even the website. I definitely could not do any of that by myself. I think it is really hard, like you said, for a high schooler to start an organization like this. So super appreciative to my parents, because they've helped me out a lot with this. And I think anyone who's participated or hosted, we really appreciate you coming and supporting the events. And just especially people who repeat, like people who are like regulars at the events. That's super great, and we're really excited that they like coming. So just anyone who's participated, we really appreciate it. And obviously SLB Radio for having me. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks. I hope we'll see you creating a podcast here. And you just heard Mihika Chopra.
Thank you.
Live from historic Allegheny Square. You're listening to the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings from SLB Radio Productions.